Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started because we have a lot to get through. And we're going to get Representative Huntley a moment. There is a quorum, and so let's see. Representative Anderson, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and I move them.
Why, thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Anderson moves the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those against signify by saying no. The minutes are approved. Representative Huntley, for those, and I'll probably mention this again since we have a couple members that haven't made it in yet, this is the intention for the committee today. We will be voting on this bill by 12 o'clock. We're going to have Representative Huntley in the department take some time to explain what's in the bill, half an hour-ish. We're going to make sure that we have some time for members to ask questions or make some comments after the department has taken their time to go through the bill. Then we will do public testimony, and I'm going to ask those that have signed up to testify, please keep your comments to 1 to 2 minutes, preferably focused on particulars that are in the bill, not focusing on the global issues that we're facing dealing with mental health. We don't have a lot of time, considering deadline is just in 2 weeks. So I do apologize if I may cut you short ahead of time. And then we will spend the last part of the meeting going through the multiple amendments that have been given to us. And so we're going to get started. Representative Huntley, thank you for coming to the committee.
Madam Chair, I have a sort of a minor amendment that gets the bill the way I like it. I don't know if you want to do that right now or...
Representative Huntley, yes, we can do that. I will move House File 1067 on your behalf.
Yeah, it's the A3 amendment.
And Representative Huntley, is this technical changes?
It's technical changes, and I have an amendment to the amendment on line 1.5 of the amendment after the word advisory. Insert the word council.
We will incorporate that into the author's amendment.
And this is just a technical correction. And I can't imagine there'd be any objection.
No. Members, are there any questions that you may have for Representative Huntley dealing with A3? And we will go ahead and vote on the approval of Amendment A3. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those against? Representative Huntley, A3 has been approved, and it's in the order that you like.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1067 contains the statutory language necessary to implement the Governor's Mental Health Initiative. It is a result of 3 years of work by the Minnesota Mental Health Action Group, a inclusive, broad-based coalition of mental health providers, hospitals, counties, health plans, consumer advocacy organizations, and the Minnesota Departments of Human Services and Health. And they all came together to deal with many of the frustrating limitations of our current mental health system. People have long recognized that our mental health system suffers from a number of counterproductive financial incentives that drive many of the barriers to access that frustrate people with mental illness and their families. The proposal takes steps to address many of the underlying problems related to inequitable access to treatment services, problems in the quality and timeliness of care, and the vague lines of accountability that characterize our current fragmented system. It emphasizes the importance of case management and care coordination to bring systems of care together. Mental health care is health care, and a growing body of research is showing that people with mental illness have been poorly served by a system that treats mental health problems in isolation from physical health care. Uniting these is essential to getting access to the right treatment at the right time and in the right setting. At the same time, the proposal recognizes that persons with disabling mental health conditions rely heavily on county social services and need continued access to these supports. This is a bipartisan proposal, and it was a bipartisan proposal last year. I've already done the amendment, and I would just like to reemphasize that this bill tries to deal with what is the lines of accountability that characterize the current fragmented system, and it emphasizes the importance of case management and care coordination to bring systems of care together. And it's one of the reasons I'm here on this bill, because that those sentences fit in with all the problems in our healthcare system, which is lack of coordination of care and a fragmented system. I have Assistant Commissioner Wes Koistra here to provide a more detailed overview of the bill, and if we have time, we'll do the walkthrough of the bill with Don Allen from the Department of Human Services. So, Commissioner Koistra.
Commissioner
Koistra. Madam Chair, my name is Wes Koistra from the Department of Human Services. For those of you who attended the Mental Health Caucus on Wednesday evening, I appreciate your patience. I'm going to go through a similar overview, but I feel like it's important information to give to those who are not able to attend. The Governor first introduced the Mental Health Initiative last session. We did make some limited progress last session in achieving some rate increases for mental health professionals. We received some time-limited crisis funding. We also received appropriations to track mental health beds, psychiatric beds, and appropriations to develop an outcome system so we can measure outcomes in our mental health delivery system. We've brought the initiative back this year. There's been some changes from last year. There's been some initial investments since last year's proposal. These changes are really, again, the result of the work of many people. And so we're hoping this year that we'll have a more complete acknowledgement of the tremendous need to improve access to effective mental health services. As Representative Huntley mentioned, this is not a collection of ideas formulated at the state agency. It really represents the work and ideas of many people, organizations, including individuals with mental illness, their families, organizations that represent people with mental illness, service providers, clinicians, healthcare purchasers, educators, counties, and state agencies. They've been working as the Mental Health Action Group since it was formed in the fall of 2003, and they've been meeting regularly since that time to bring good ideas to action. I can say the last meeting that we've had was just as well attended as the first meeting. These will be ideas that will improve access to effective treatment services that are needed desperately by children and adults with mental illness. This proposal calls for significant new mental health investments. If passed, mental health services will benefit from an additional $120 million of investments over the next 4 years. These investments and policy proposals are based on a set of principles and on the belief that mental illness is a disease of the brain, and mental health treatment should be integrated into the mainstream of the healthcare delivery system. That mental health treatment needs to be provided early at the onset of symptoms and provided with the same rigor and urgency as other healthcare diseases. That mental health treatment needs to be disciplined in focusing on what has proven to be most effective, on what works for the patient. Mental health care must be integrated with other health care services, and health care must be coordinated with social services such as housing and employment. We want to respond to people's needs and whole cloth. We cannot artificially separate mental health care from other health care. We cannot separate health care needs from social services. It doesn't work, and our current system is a proof of that. But even the best treatment approaches have little value if they cannot be accessed. People should not have to become disabled before mental health treatment is provided. It is not the way health care is approached with other diseases, and mental illness should not be treated differently. So with this initiative, we want to invest in improving service access so that the right service is provided at the right time in the right location. And with this initiative, we are applying the objectives of mental health parity to our own public-funded health care system. The initiative has three primary components. The first is to establish a common comprehensive mental health benefit set across all public programs. Over recent years, we have expanded the medical assistance mental health benefit set, and it now includes many of the evidence-based services that have been identified by national experts. However, the mental health benefit set for general assistance medical care and Minnesota care are limited. They do not include such services as assertive community treatment, intensive residential treatment, crisis services, children's residential treatment, and care coordination. People with health care coverage under General Assistance Medical Care and Minnesota Care, like those that are uninsured or underinsured by commercial products, rely on county-funded services that are limited by the availability of funds and the varying commitments of each county. This proposal calls for General Assistance Medical Care and Minnesota Care to provide the same benefits as medical assistance, so that anyone who is eligible for coverage can receive the services that they need. The model benefit set is funded through a combination of new funds and grant transfers from counties to health care programs. These transfers are client-specific and are equal to the cost of services that will be transferred from the county to the health care programs. Grants will not be withheld from counties unless service obligations are lessened and transferred in an equal amount, and that's an important point of how we want to approach this. The second major component of this initiative is to integrate mental health treatment into the mainstream of the healthcare delivery system and ensure that all healthcare is closely coordinated with social services. Integration of physical and mental health care provides more timely access to treatment and preventative care, more informed treatment, and treatment that better addresses the needs of the whole person. It simply provides for better health outcomes. It has been shown that models that treat physical and mental health problems in isolation fail to optimally treat either. People with mental illness tend to have higher rates of other diseases, including diabetes, hypertension, cancer, and cancer, than the general population. People with healthcare diseases have higher rates of mental illness, often caused by stressors associated with their condition. People with mental illness have less access to preventative care. Studies have shown that physical health complaints of people with mental illness are often ignored by medical clinicians who inappropriately attribute the complaints to their mental illness. Still, most people access mental health services in primary care settings, not in mental health clinics. 80% of all psychotropic medications for adults and children are prescribed by primary care physicians. Over 60% of the children are prescribed these medications absent any consultation from mental health professionals. That's not what we mean by integration. The most telling statistic is that people with mental illness on average live 25 years less than the general population. This proposal promotes the development of treatment models that address the whole needs of the individual. It calls for the development of health care and social service partnerships that integrate mental health care with physical health care and ensures coordination of health care with social services. These service networks will be initiated through a consumer-driven RFP process that requires social service and health care partnerships to demonstrate how services will be integrated and coordinated. This requires willing partners. We're not forcing anyone to the table. The number of RFP respondents will be limited, and if a county is not ready to do this in their region, they will not be required to participate in this change. Likewise, people with mental illness will have the opportunity to choose if they want to enroll in the integrated network. In response to consumer concerns, this year we have changed the proposal to allow consumers to opt out without cause. The development of these networks is a significant reform effort because integrated care has repeatedly shown to improve the health outcomes of people with mental illness across all healthcare needs, including mental health. Lack of coordination across systems of care has proven over and over to delay or restrict needed treatment and to deliver poor outcomes. The integrated networks will offer a new approach of care that is based on partnership between healthcare and social services. The design will benefit from the input of consumers and families and will focus on improvements to access, quality, and accountability. This focus will be demonstrated in three critical stages, including the RFP design, enforceable contract standards, and evaluation provisions. Consumer appeal provisions for integrated service delivery will be significantly more robust than what is available today under the fee-for-service system. Funding is also requested for an additional managed care ombudsman staff to assist consumers with service concerns. Case management and care coordination are key to the integration of services across systems of care. Effective case management is essential to delivery of social services. It's essential to achieving an integrated healthcare system and communication across systems. But let me mention that while we're trying to strengthen case management and care coordination functions in this bill, we are seriously concerned about the potential loss of case management revenues. And I want to mention to this committee that this concern is a loss of federal case management revenues that is occurring right now as federal policy changes with respect to reimbursement. This concern is represented in another governor's budget proposal requesting $40 million to be made available to offset potential losses. Let me also mention that we already have authority in law that was passed last year to develop managed care options for people with mental illness. The difference between this and what was passed last year is that this focuses on case management and care coordination. This provides a model that is specific to the needs of people with mental illness, and this requires social service agencies and healthcare agencies to come together in partnership. And we think this reflects the needs of people with mental illness much better than proposals that do not have these attributes. Finally, I just want to mention there's a number of investments in the governor's proposal to develop and support an effective mental health infrastructure. These include, and these figures are over 4 years, $46 million to shore up school-based mental health services infrastructure for uninsured and underinsured children. We've lost $40 million annually in federal revenues due to policy changes at the federal level, and this is really buying back about a third of what was lost. $28 million to expand mental health crisis and stabilization infrastructure. We think with this money we can create a statewide crisis system that will avoid unnecessary hospitalizations. $300,000 to continue to monitor and track the availability of mental health services and create a system for measuring mental health service outcomes. $12.5 million to expand the application of evidence-based practices and best practices. We need more center community treatment teams. We need to develop more co-location models where mental health professionals are at the same site as primary care physicians. We need to develop more services to address co-occurring mental illness and chemical dependency. There's $8.5 million to extend mental health rate increases that were approved by the 2006 legislature to also include children's therapeutic services and support providers and adult rehabilitative mental health services medication education. And there's $7.5 million to develop capacity to address mental health needs of other specialty populations. This includes those that have a low incidence illness, such as attachment disorders, childhood trauma, and eating disorders. It also includes funds to better address culturally specific needs of people with racial and ethnic minorities. We know that our state is becoming more diverse, and we have to do a better job of addressing those needs. And then there's also added, that was not in the bill last year, $10 million to expand access to a range of housing the service options, which is certainly key for stability in people with mental illness. Additional components of the bill include a change to the county share for regional treatment center costs. We've eliminated the county share in the first 30 days, and we've increased the county share after 60 days to make sure that there's financial incentives to make community-based services the cheapest option. We've also added an intensive outpatient benefit that is not included in our benefit set today, and this is to address a very serious need often by people with borderline personality disorders, and we do not have efficient billing systems for that service at this time. So that is the broad overview of the bill, and I'm going to give my chair to Mr. Allen, if that's okay with you, ma'am.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Allen, if you could, members, just to know, hopefully you've had a chance to look at the side-by-side comparison. Many of the aspects that is in this bill was also in House File 196, Representative Greiling's bill. I'm going to ask Mr. Allen to give a brief overview of the multiple sections. However, to focus really on Section 3 and 6, because that's going to be, I believe, where many of the discussions that we have. If there's other questions that members have, we can do that after Mr. Allen testifies. Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Don Allen with the Department of Human Services. Just to get right into it, Section 1 of the bill extends an exception until 2009 that allows providers of adult mental health rehab services to provide integrated dual diagnosis treatment of persons with mental illness and chemical dependency. Currently, those folks would need to be licensed drug and alcohol counselors in order to provide those services. We're currently working on professional qualification standards that are specific to that treatment, and we will bring those before the legislature before this next 2009 sunset. Sections 2 and Sections 4 are essentially the same. They amend the Adult and then the Children's Mental Health Act. This is part of an effort to make accountability more clear. They just specify that the county's not responsible for providing a mental health service if that person has coverage for that service in their insurance program. Section 3 is where much of the reform outlined in the proposal would take place. Language in Section 3 relates to both the adoption of a model benefit set across all our health care programs, and it relates to the pilot projects that would allow us to work with serving persons with disabilities in managed care while retaining the connection with social services in the county. Subdivision 1 just sets a general policy direction. Subdivision 2 requires us to continue to work with stakeholders, report back to the legislature next year with further recommendations regarding the implementation and funding of this system, make sure that we ensure the continuity of care for persons affected by the reforms, make sure that we're accountable for efficient and effective use of resources so that we assure client access to all available client protections and appeal processes. And it provides quite a bit of detail on our authority to make the budget transfers necessary to finance both the adoption of the model benefit set across our health care programs and any transfers that would be necessary to move persons with disabilities in those projects or in those local areas that choose to develop those projects. Subdivision 3 is specific to those local projects for the integration of care for persons with disabilities. Again, it charges us with continuing to work with our stakeholders to develop an RFP that would solicit county and health plan partnerships for those projects. It sets criteria for the formation of those local projects. And that work has come from our stakeholder groups and a group that we've worked out with the county. So they've identified what they think the roles of the health plan should be, what the roles of the county should be, and from that have kind of outlined where the need for communication and coordination of the two is. It also asks us to amend the department's contracts with participating health plans. A separate body, the Managed Care for Persons with Disabilities Stakeholder Group, has developed a set of recommendations around purchasing specifications for the department to use in its contracts with managed care plans when they serve persons with disabilities. And that, again, was developed to serve some separate authority that the department has to do that. We've run it by our stakeholder groups for a mental health perspective and just kind of summarize those things in law here. We're to allow applicants at least 90 days to respond, and we're limited to, in the first phase of this, to no more than 40% of the state's population. Finally, we're required to evaluate these preferred integrated networks prior to expanding beyond that first phase, and we're authorized to seek any federal waivers necessary in order to implement the projects. That's a more detailed overview of Section 3. Section 4 I covered already. Section 5 is common in both this bill and the Greiley-Marty bill. It reestablishes some specific authority around children's mental health grants that was repealed in 2003 when most of the children's mental health grants were rolled into a Children and Community Services block grant. Section 6 amends, as Wes had mentioned earlier, the county share of regional treatment center placements. Currently, the county share for those placements is 20%. What we're proposing here is to have it be 0% in the first 30 days, 20% in the second 30 days, and 50% thereafter. Most of the average length of stay for persons in our regional centers is about 90 days. In our community-based hospitals around the rest of the state in greater Minnesota, that length of stay is much shorter, more in the order of 25 days. Currently, the per diem rate for RTCs is running between $500 and $600 now. 20% means that the counties are paying about $120 a day for that care. There are many intensive community-based options available, but unfortunately they tend to cost more than $120 a day. And so what we're trying to do here is line up some of the incentives. We currently, I'm told, have a waiting list of about 40 people wanting to get into the Anoka Regional Treatment Center and about 70 people who would be waiting to get out if they had the community services available to them. Our feeling is that if we have the grants that we're requesting would do a lot to increase that community-based capacity and give the counties the tools that they need to reduce those lengths of stay. Section 7 creates the intensive outpatient for dialectical behavioral therapy. That's an evidence-based practice for persons with borderline personality disorder. Section 8 makes changes necessary to move mental health targeted case management into the GAMC and the Minnesota Care programs. It also contains language that repeals the current mental health targeted case management local share grants. Those grants are then used as the primary funding mechanism to finance the creation of the model benefit set across programs. Section 9 amends our current Children and Therapeutic Services and Support Statute to require providers to let the commissioner review their curriculum for parent teaming training for mental health behavioral aides. They're currently required to provide that training. We've prepared a curriculum in partnership with some parent organization, and we would like this input to be available to the providers. Section 9 contains a provision relating to the adoption or the implementation of those regional projects. It is felt that those regional projects are going to be especially beneficial for children who get so much of their care delivered through pediatric settings. This would require kids who are not disabled to remain in the managed care program. Section 12, there are many sections like this. These are a ratable reduction that was put in place for our managed care programs. This just states that when we transfer money to the healthcare programs to provide those services, that they're not subject to the ratable reductions. We want the full value of that transfer to be available to provide care. Section 13 is similar. Section 14 provides for a rate increase for providers, primarily smaller children's therapeutic services and supports providers. Section 15 is the language necessary to make the benefits under the GAMC program the same as mental health benefits under GAMC, the same as those under medical assistance. Section 16 does the same thing for Minnesota Care. Section 17 does the same thing then for Minnesota Care limited benefit. Section 18 is another exemption from the ratable reductions. Section 19 allows us to have a little greater flexibility in determining who's a qualified assessor in for compulsive gambling assessments. At the time the administrative rules were put in place and those laws were passed, there was really only one way to become qualified. Since that time, there are other ways to get the necessary qualifications and education. This just allows us to grant or allow persons who have equivalent preparation to conduct those assessments. It also deletes obsolete language regarding rates for court-ordered assessments. Section 20 is, changes the repealer. There was a drafting mistake in the 2005 DHS technical bill. It deleted some language that required the department to dedicate 25% of its mental health block grant to Native American programs or American Indian programs in the state. We've held faith with that and have continued to dedicate that portion of our funding to those programs. They would like that language restored in statute. Section 21 is simply a reviser's instruction to accommodate the changes in the last section is a repeal of administrative rule related to the compulsive gambling section done earlier. I hope that covers it, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Members, that I think I'll just announce that announcement that I made earlier before folks got here. We plan on voting on this bill before we leave here at noon. We wanted to do an overview and have Representative Huntley make any comments about the bill. Right now we're going to entertain questions or comments from members. Wanted to make sure that your voices were heard. And then we're going to move into some testimony and then finish up with the amendments. Representative Breitling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Allen or Representative Huntley. Page 3, line 310 and line 313. I want to have you talk a little more about the word transfers in there. This, of course, is a wonderful bill. It's very common. All the really good sections are in both bills. I remain concerned about the fact that there isn't new money to do this. You know, this bill is funded by the Healthcare Access Fund, which others, including Representative Huntley, want to use for replacing the cuts that Governor Plenty made for eligibility. But some of those people who were cut are working people with mental illness, so it's kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. And then we have the counties that are providing the social services, but I don't think anyone in this room would think that there is the infrastructure that we need for keeping people out of the revolving door, including the regional treatment centers and so forth. And so it seems like this section is really a zero-sum game when we are transferring money from the counties to the health plans. And I'm wondering why we didn't come up with new money here, and then we could build up that infrastructure that's so sorely needed in the community care.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Corster.
Representative Dreiling. A couple of points to be made. The transfers in this proposal represents money that follows the services of people currently receiving those services from the county, who will now have, and paid by the county through a combination of county funds and state grants, who will now be having those services provided as health care coverage under General Assistance Medical Care and Minnesota Care. We've been meeting with the counties on a number of occasions to make sure our methodology represents only the funds that follow the obligation change, not all the services provide those individuals, but only that, say, for example, if a person is receiving a certain community treatment now through county and they receive that treatment under as a benefit, that money follows that person. So it should reduce obligations in like amount of reductions in grants. I think the counties are comfortable when we met with them with the principal. There's, of course, each county has a 25-page spreadsheet that we're looking at together. So, you know, the devil's in the details, but we've made a commitment to make that work. I think there's language in the bill that says that we will come back and make sure that we've hit the mark on that. The other point is new money. There is new money in the bill for this because we're doing this on a one-time basis for the first year only, and we assume there's going to be significant growth in access as a result of this change, and there's new money that's applied to that growth. With respect to the comment on the Health Care Access Fund, I believe that the February forecast shows that in 2011, the Health Care Access Fund has over $500 million. There's enough money in the Health Care Access Fund to fund back all the cuts of 2003 and pay for this with about $60 million remaining. So there is money for both here. And I would also like to mention that part of our principle in this proposal is that mental health treatment is health care. And if there is a case to be made for poor access, I think we can all agree that there is poor access to the needed mental health care in the health care delivery system today. So we think it's a legitimate health care access fund use. I looked the other day at a list of healthcare access fund uses over years, and there's 4 pages of lists of use of the healthcare access fund for access issues that were not Minnesota Care uses, and they continue each session. So I think that there is, in this case, with the February forecast, there's money that's adequate to address both, but I don't think that any longer can be depicted as that we're doing this based upon the cuts on 03, because there's really enough money for both in that case.
Representative Dreiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Koistra, we will hear from the counties later, but some of my concerns about those transfers came from the counties, so I don't know that is worked out. And I'll leave it up to Representative Huntley to decide, you know, how the Health Care Access Fund can be used. Certainly the model benefit set is something that I've discussed with him and Senator Berglund is a very legitimate use, but some of these other uses, others have questioned if there's that much money in there, you know, maybe this can work out, but that's news to me. And I always worry around here about how we spend a lot of things multiple times, and then mental health care always comes out with the short end of the stick. So that's my biggest concern, is coming up with some money and not leaving the counties short. And even if it's a quid pro quo, I don't think that is enough for the counties, who will be still having the social services, even if the medical model is used for the what the health plans might be doing. So it's the zero-sum game that I remain concerned about, but I certainly appreciate the bill and the all the initiatives in it. Everything that's listed that we'll all be talking about, you know, for 90% of our discussion is apple pie and motherhood to everybody in this room. But we always have to show us the money and show us that we have the social services and not just the medical model in the, at the end of the day.
Commissioner Corsten?
Yeah,
or Representative Huntley? I feel someone wants to respond down there.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to mention that beyond those transfers, there is $120 million of new money that's going into the service system. That's not, the transfers are not counted in that amount. Those are new appropriations. And I'm more than willing to give, to provide the members at another time a fund balance on the healthcare access fund that shows what's there after the February forecast.
Madam Chair, of course, that would be helpful. Representative Bryan.
Madam Chair, could we hear from Representative Huntley?
Representative Huntley.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, I support probably enthusiastically about 95% of the policy in this bill. I'm a little personally concerned about where it's funded from. And obviously, some of us have different views on what the healthcare access fund should be used for and what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. And I guess that will have to be decided in my committee. I'd love to find the $40 million someplace else. Whether we can do that, I don't know yet.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Huntley, I will be joining everyone in this room to pound on you to make sure you find some real money for this bill and not funny money, and so we'll continue that conversation.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Are there any other questions that members may have of either Commissioner Koister or Mr. Allen? Seeing none, gentlemen, don't go far. Mr. Cunningham has been involved in this process for the last couple years, and so I'm sure he will share his journey. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I really appreciate being here today, and I'll try to be as brief as I can. My name is Gary Cunningham, and I'm the CEO of North Point Health and Wellness Center in North Minneapolis. We are the largest single community health center in the state of Minnesota. We are also a large social service center that provides services to over 70,000 patient visits a year in North Minneapolis. I should also mention that I'm also the Director of Primary Care for Hennepin County, and that I'm here today speaking as a private citizen, as a representative of the Citizens League. How I got involved with this project is, at the time this project was created, I was president of the Citizens League. I think many of you know that the Citizens League is a nonpartisan organization set to improve the quality of life in our state, and that we have participated in numerous legislation and activities to ensure that Minnesota is one of the places in our country that we can say is innovative and making a difference for our citizens in so many different ways. I also have served as co-chair of the Minnesota Mental Health Action Group, known as MHAG, since it was formed in 2003. And in that role, we have really worked with a steering committee made up of consumers, families, advocacy organizations, mental health professionals, hospitals and clinics, health plans, local governments, agencies, and the Department of Human Services. What MHAG is really about is, when I first got involved in this project, somebody wheeled into my office a stack of reports, and the stack was over 5 feet tall of reports on the mental health system over the years in the state of Minnesota and across the country, and the problems that people have in, one, accessing care for mental illness, number two, addressing systemic and long-term service issues in our system, addressing funding issues within our system. And so part of this effort is really to get at some of the fundamental changes that are needed here in Minnesota, but also across this country where people with mental illness are suffering because we can't get our act together about providing them decent services in a uniform way. Clearly, we're all affected in some way by these issues of mental illness, be it our family members or people that we know. I personally was raised by someone with bipolar and had to go through the process of trying to get that person committed and address some issues, and clearly found that our system doesn't work in a way that we would expect it to work for the resources that we are allocating to this system today. And so fundamental changes are definitely needed. The problems with the Minnesota mental health system began to look at a system that is too complicated for people to navigate. Inadequate access due to fragmentation, lack of parity, and poor coordination of services are just a few of the things that we have identified as major problems in the system. Lack of accountability of programs, agencies, and providers, and problems for consumers and families caused by dysfunctional payment systems. Focus on a consensus basis. The steering committee of MHAG, and if I could, if there are steering committee members here, could you either raise your hand or stand? Would you please just stand for a minute so people can recognize who you are? Please. And this is just a sample of the folks that we've had participating in the MHAG process. In this process, people agree to work together to resolve problems at the table. They agree to work as a group, and we had some difficult issues. Representative Briley mentioned the issues of counties as one of those issues that we have been working very diligently to work out. But this isn't about business as usual. We cannot afford to continue the current system that we have here in this state. This is about people getting together and acting in a different way that have the public interest at heart, in the interest of consumers that consume mental health services at heart. We work with hundreds of individuals that were part of our focus groups and our groups that help prepare model benefit set and other aspects of the legislation that you have before you. So this was a united effort that we have. And we can keep things the way they are. We can continue to do business as usual, and people continue to be harmed. We stand the opportunity today to be at the forefront of the changes that are necessary in the mental health system throughout this country. And so this, what you're deciding here today, really has a huge magnitude for people throughout the country that are struggling with what to do with the system. And so we can step up to the plate, as Minnesota has done time and time again, to make a difference. Now, as it's already been talked about, the priorities of MHAG have been to integration of medical and mental health care, and the coordination of services under a single consumer-centered plan, simplification of the government programs, improvement of payment methods to reward better mental health care, and early identification and treatment. Clear identification of the roles and responsibilities of the players involved in the system, and focus on producing results, and the formation of a public-private partnership as a part of what we need to do to address this issue. MHAG, in its time, has accomplished much: a common vision and guiding principles, a model benefit set. We convened many consumer forums and focus groups, designed a statewide quality information program, developed recommendations for changing the public payment system, developed action plans on many other topics ranging from prevention to school-based mental health services. Public and private agencies and mental health organizations have taken part in building these recommendations. This is a broad-based coalition that the likes we haven't seen in this state before around this issue. A mental health initiative was introduced in 2006, and part of it was passed. This is now your opportunity to show the state of Minnesota that we can act in a bipartisan manner to address a real public health concern that we have in our state, and that's dealing effectively and efficiently to treat people with mental illness as a medical condition. The 2007 Mental Health Initiative recommends, based on the Mental Health Initiative in House File 1067 and Senate File 1025, this legislation reintroduces several components of the 2006 legislation and introduces new improvements based on recommendations from consumers, advocates, family members, counties, and providers since the legislation was introduced last year. This legislation, as I mentioned already, is bipartisan in nature, and actually goes beyond that, because this is really about how we're going to take care of some of the most vulnerable people in our community and our society. And to do that in a way that I see day to day that isn't working very well for these citizens. It has broad-based support from the Minnesota's major mental health consumers, families, advocate organizations. I have some handouts here for you today so that for those of you that aren't familiar with MHAG, if I could, thank you so much. I would be happy to stand for any questions that you may have. I really appreciate the opportunity and thank you for your service to make a difference for people with mental health issues in the state. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. Do members have any questions? I should note, because I am going to do the 2 minutes just that I mentioned earlier, Mr. Cunningham actually was part of Representative Huntley's group of testifiers to really go overview the bill. And so that's why you got a little bit more than 2 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate
and I, and it wasn't because you've known me all my life that I was being biased or anything. members, to note, we will actually sometime in the future invite Mr. Cunningham back to talk specifically about North Point and what they're able to do. One of the stories that he shared with me earlier this week was his workers going into a high-rise and door knocking every door, and I believe it was 300 individuals that was found to have high blood pressure that was able to be treated, but how they're being able to utilize those outreach workers and to be able to capture individuals that are struggling with mental health, that may have not been diagnosed, that may have been diagnosed, that currently aren't being treated in a culturally specific manner. And so we'll invite you back, Mr. Cunningham, to share your the positive outcomes that you are having in North Minneapolis.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for coming. If we can get Ms. Aberholden and Ms. Hansen to come up at the same time. And I should mention, there will be a change in the order after Ms. Kara Quill. Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sue Aberholden. I'm the Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, and I'm here today to speak in favor of the Governor's Mental Health Initiative, and I do want to mention that the NAMI Board did vote to support the bill. On Monday of this week, you might have seen over 500 people from around the state who gathered to show their support for investing in mental health. The message was very clear that the time to invest in mental health is now, and that, frankly, we are tired of waiting. NAMI has been actively involved in the MHAG process since its inception. We feel quite a bit of ownership over this proposal, and we're extremely excited about the investments. Ensuring that our children's mental health and family service collaboratives continue to support children in school is crucial. Supporting and encouraging services that treat eating disorders, trauma, attachment disorders, and that help people from specific cultures access mental health care is critical. Housing has always been a top priority for NAMI because without stable housing, recovery is nearly impossible. Creating true parity amongst the publicly funded mental health programs that will allow people to work and move seamlessly amongst the programs is really important. Many people with mental illness are on Minnesota Care because they want to work. NAMI is particularly supportive of the infusion of funds for crisis services. If we're going to address the criminalization of mental illness and overcrowded emergency departments, we simply must invest in crisis teams. There was a mother who wanted to come today, but because of time constraints, didn't. And she just wanted to say that her son, when he became suicidal at the age of 21, and it reached a very, very low point. She actually called for help by the East Metro Adult Crisis Stabilization, EMAC. Teresa came to their home, helped their son tremendously within hours. She gave him hope, and most importantly, she gave their family hope. The last place that I want to speak to is the Integrated Care Network. NAMI has decided to support this section of the bill as well. There's a lot to say on this portion of the bill, but of course there's not much time left. So I'll try to quickly lay out our hopes for this particular approach. People's health care and mental health care will be coordinated. We hope that care coordination, much like a medical home model, promotes earlier intervention, prevention, and coordination. There will be a financial incentive to actually provide early intervention and community support. People will get help getting connected to the right mental health providers and treatments, and people will have a choice to try something new. Do we know for sure if this new approach will work? We don't. But there are no saints or devils in this system, neither the health insurance companies nor the counties. We need to figure out who does what best. We have learned a lot through the MnDO program, and I've talked with a lot of people in the disability community. I believe we can build in the protections we need based on their experiences, such as review of denials. I know there is some concern that there is now voluntary enrollment, but we believe it's critical that this proposal be voluntary. I don't often use sports analogies, even though I have five brothers, but NAMI does believe that if you build it, they will come. We want to remind you about the Legislative Auditor's Report that talked about the problems of our county-based system, state-supervised, that there isn't equal access across the state, there isn't a lot of equity, and we just think that, you know, maybe it's time to try something new. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and we come back. But what we know now is that what we have doesn't work for many, many people. Thank you.
Ms. Hanson. Madam Chair, members, my name is Sue Hanson, and I am the parent of a 32-year-old man with schizophrenia. I am also chair of the NAMI Minnesota Legislative Committee, and I am on their board of directors. Over the past 2 years, our legislative committee, which is made up of people who have a mental illness and family members, has spent a lot of time discussing the many problems that people face. The need for housing, employment, crisis services, and health care have been very clear priorities. One of the longest and most intense discussions we have had in this committee is over case management. It definitely depends on where you live and who your case manager is. Sometimes people have good case managers, sometimes not. Sometimes case managers have had training, and sometimes they haven't. My son was in and out of a group home over a period of almost 4 years. During one of those stays, which was for a period of about 18 months, he physically saw his case manager twice. Now, this is a man with schizophrenia who believes he is God, whether he's on or off medication. I assure you that two visits in 18 months isn't enough. One of the members on my legislative committee had to inform her son's case manager about assertive community treatment teams. This particular case manager wasn't aware that this service existed for people with serious and persistent mental illness. It's been very clear in our discussions that there is not coordination of health care and mental health care, and often there isn't a coordination of social services. I assure you that I'm not blaming case managers. Very often their caseloads are enormous, and there's only so much time in any given day. But there doesn't seem to be any incentive for the county to actually lower caseloads or to improve the services, because if someone is on medical assistance and ends up in the hospital, MA pays. Families have a difficult time dealing with the county when they don't get what's needed for their family member or for themselves. It's very hard to find out who to complain to or who to appeal to. In my own case, when a case manager didn't file proper paperwork for a 60-90-day report, my son's commitment expired, and we lost him to the streets of New Jersey. We did eventually get him back to Minnesota, and I decided to make sure that this wouldn't happen to someone else. It took me weeks, well, actually, it took me months, of phoning and talking to many different people at the county to finally get some satisfaction on our case. It might be easier to enforce a contract with a health care provider, an insurance company, than our current option. Having the governor's proposal be voluntary is very important to NAMI members. If people have finally been able to get the help they need, then they don't have to be a part of this program. But if people haven't been able to get what they need, then they can try something different. I do urge you to support this important legislation for myself and other families and consumers with mental illness. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hanson. Are there any questions, Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You are taking questions on.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you for coming to the committee, Ms. Hanson. Your son was getting help from what county in the state?
Where did it happen?
In Hennepin County?
Right.
And how long have you been dealing with Hennepin County as far as services?
Well, he's been ill for 12 years, but he's really only been in the system about six.
And, Madam Chair?
Representative Anderson.
Ms. Hanson, for the time that you've been involved with the county, how much of that time has been a struggle?
Ms. Hanson.
Representative Anderson, all of it. The whole 6 years.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you. Mr. Wilson. And if we can get Mr. Brand on the way up, too.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, I'm Will Wilson from the Mental Health Association. Mental Health Association is co-chair of the Mental Health Legislative Network, and we've been an active participant in the MHEG process from the beginning. Our mission is to educate, lobby, and advocate for individuals with mental illnesses as they navigate our fragmented mental health system. Our emphasis is on maintaining the rights of individuals and empowering them to reach their own goals. It is our belief that our mental health system is broken and in need of sweeping reform. Our delivery system is filled with barriers and gaps, many of which are intentionally designed to block consumers from receiving services. In many cases, the judicial system is used as an access point for mental health services, and people with mental illnesses are frequently discouraged by the barriers they encounter. A big part of our work as an association is keeping their spirits up, encouraging them to keep fighting even though the barriers that they encounter seem arbitrary and cruel. We believe that the Mental Health Initiative is an important opportunity towards building a mental health system that meets consumers' needs. We believe that this bill is worthy of your support, and we hope it passes this year. The significant investments in infrastructure are targeted wisely towards shoring up the community-based delivery system. The expansion of mental health benefits in GAMC and Minnesota Care is a significant step towards parity. We also support the provider rate increases, the funding for services to niche populations, and the effort to use evidence-based practices and best practices. Regarding the payment model, we believe it is possible to strike an appropriate balance between county and health plan, between medical and social services, and between consumer and delivery system. No one knows precisely what the final product will look like, but we plan to participate in a consumer forum that will develop criteria for the RFP and the pilot. During that process, we will push for the best possible outcome for consumers. We do not wish to see social services medicalized, and we do not want to see one set of barriers replaced with another. We will advocate that any integrated service model should do no harm through disruption of services. It should include strong accountability measures, and it should integrate medical and social services only to the extent that it will improve the lives of those with mental illnesses. Finally, we are very pleased that the consumer participation will be voluntary. Voluntary participation ensures that entities serving people with mental illnesses will continue to respond to consumers' needs, and consumers will be empowered to push for the best care. We hope you pass this bill so we can continue to craft what, in our view, is a rare opportunity to reform our system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Are there any questions by members? Seeing none, Mr. Brand.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ron Brand, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs, which is a statewide organization that has services in around 120 different locations in Minnesota serving children and adults. The providers are a key part of the safety net here in our state, but they're also vital tech providers or key providers for the state health plans. First of all, I'm here to speak in favor of the bill, and I wanted to commend the governor and Representative Huntley and the department for their work on this. It's been a process that has been as open and competent and collaborative efforts to problem solve. The tough questions that were asked and the intense listening to try to understand the nature of the problems, and seeking out our best thinking to try to craft a proposal. This proposal here today is really only possible because there have been many efforts of them over the years to develop improvements in the mental health system. But it really is the next stage in modernizing our mental health service system, and it's overdue. It's overdue for investments, and we're overdue for reforms. Our association members and staff have been very involved with MHAG, and we're pleased to see many of the ideas that we have discussed representing this proposal. It is founded on the right values and the right principles, and generally headed in the right direction. A key policy assumption here is that mental health should simply be treated like other health care conditions, and that at times people will need social services to support the treatment that they are receiving in order to maximize their ability to recover. But in order to implement that approach, it requires us to make adjustments in how we cover services, what services are covered, and how funding occurs. And that is part of what this proposal brings to us. We like the emphasis on early intervention and connections with health care. I think of it as we want to do health first for people, not fail first. Why not get people to help first rather than fail first? It's sad that many people have to wait for services, and too often the gateway to care is falling to a level of disability or poverty or civil commitment or custody relinquishment in order to get services. And it's happening in my own family. The improved benefits standardized across all health plans, our providers are glad for that. It will give us the tools to be able to provide the right services. And some of those services are currently paid for by counties or are provided as charity care by our member organizations. And we appreciate that that will help relieve some of that burden. Last year, there was a reimbursement rate increase that was approved as part of this proposal. And we are delighted and looking forward to that coming into effect this July 1st. We think that that will enable us to be able to retain and maintain our professional workforce, but also to improve access to care. In the end, this is really about getting resources on the ground to people. And all the discussions at the higher levels of the health plan, the state, the county relationships, in the end, what we're really about is getting resources on the ground to clients and to services. There are many excellent programs in this state. People will talk about the system being broken. It is not so much that it's broken. We need to make it, I think we have much to build on with wonderful staff and programs. We need to make it easier for them to do the right thing and give them the tools, and that's part of what this proposal does. So there are infrastructure investments in school mental health and in some of the service areas where reimbursement-based payments for funding are less likely to be successful. And we support those. Others will talk more about that. Last year, we were seriously concerned about whether grant funds that go to the counties or county funds would be redirected and lost. And we do appreciate the department's careful efforts to analyze that situation and that what appears to be commitments in the bill to assure that the dollars will not be lost, that only the dollars necessary to fund the expanded benefits would be transferred. We've been glad for an open and deliberate process by the department and to listen and to solve problems. The bill continues to have a commitment to stakeholder involvement, and we're glad for that because there's much work that needs to be done. There are administrative issues and contracting issues and purchasing specs and consumer protections that all need to be addressed as we go forward. And there'll be opportunities to learn together. Is this bill totally put together the way we would do it? No. Is it heading in the right direction? Yes. Is there more work ahead? Of course there is. But the proposal is worthy of, it's a worthy investment and I think deserves broad bipartisan support. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today, and I would hope that we have an opportunity, I think, this year to do something hugely important. And I imagine us at the 4th of July picnic talking about what we accomplished here in this legislative session, and I think we would be able to look back with some pride of accomplishment in being able to talk about this proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Brand. Any questions for Mr. Brand? Seeing none, thank you very much. Ms. Abelson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Nancy Abramson, Executive Director of Mental Health Resources. Our mission is to foster hope and recovery for people affected by mental illness. We serve over 2,500 clients a year who have serious mental illness, often complicated by chemicals, poverty, homelessness, criminal history, other chronic illnesses, or all of the above. We offer case management. I'm concerned about targeted case management. Intensive services, we have 3 ACT teams at this time, 8 supportive housing programs, a community support program, CSC, those have to stay in place, living skills training, an outreach clinic, and a pilot model of new ways to combine and deliver services, which I want to tell you about in just a moment. MHR Mental Health Resources is a member of the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs, on which I serve as a board member and officer. I was also fortunate to work in the MHAG work group on ease of access and coordination of services. My own perspective, and I believe it with everything I know, is that our mental health system needs integrated services, a real collaboration between our public and private sectors, each of whom have something to contribute to this great enterprise. I am here today to speak in support of the Governor's Mental Health Initiative. Our MHR Metro team, that pilot program I want to tell you about, has experienced in the last 2 years an innovative and collaborative opportunity with a major health plan, Medica UBH, the state, as well as some involvement of 5 counties. The Metro team staff offer intensive short-term community treatment to health plan members who are experiencing severe symptoms of mental illness and often multiple life stressors that would normally end them up in a hospital. The project has been successful in terms of outcomes, reduced hospitalizations, and improved functioning. But that's not what I want to emphasize.
Ms. Abelson, I hate to do this to you, but I did apologize ahead of time that I'd be cutting some folks off, because yours is in writing and we can read it. And so I do apologize. I want to make sure that members have any questions, because we have about 15 more folks to get through.
May I summarize one?
Yes, ma'am.
One of the clients I wanted to tell you about that was served by this team offered an example of how the team was able to work both with the health plan to increase their services, with the county to increase their services, for the client to come out as a successful example of collaboration, for her parents to be very appreciative of the services, and for this particular client to be able to succeed in living in the community, getting a job, and being able to have dreams and hope for the future. Thank you very much.
And thank you for understanding. Are there any questions about the work that Ms. Abramson's organization is doing, or her support of the governor's bill? Thank you again.
Thank you.
Ms. Sure. And thank you very much. And if you could keep your testimony brief, I truly would appreciate it.
My daughter asked me last night if I was nervous, and I said, of course not. I can read this. Reality setting in. I might be the first one to finish in 1 minute. First of all, don't count this. I'm listed on the agenda as the state chair, Mental Health Action Council. Really, I am the state chair of the State Advisory Council on Mental Health. Okay, go.
Yes, ma'am. Please, go ahead.
Okay, members of this council are appointed by the governor and represent a variety of stakeholders from all over the state. The council also has a subcommittee on children's mental health. Personally, I serve as a family member who had a son who had schizoaffective disorder for over 13 years. He was diagnosed about 13 years ago, and during that time he was homeless. He had been in jail twice for taking $20. He smoked marijuana. He heard voices and he had delusions. The voices would also often tell him that he was no good, he was fat, or he was whatever. At one time, the voices told him to kill himself. It is terrible for a mother and their family to watch someone lose their mind and feel so helpless. It is terrible to know how to answer him when he says, "What's happening to me?" Our family found the mental health system fragmented and frustrating, and we spent years trying to get him help. 4 years ago, he died by suicide while a patient at Abbott Northwestern Hospital, so we lost our fight. However, on February 1st, at our 2007 council meeting, we supported the position statement on House File 1097. I have distributed copies. Some of the highlights that we are supporting: the comprehensive mental health benefit set across all publicly funded health care programs, the increased investments in school-based mental health services. Our children's subcommittee has advocated for this for some time, and now this is an especially urgent considering the reductions in federal funding. We support the increased funding for crisis services and recognize the importance of early intervention. We support the tracking availability of mental health services and measuring those services of outcomes. The council supports the funding for culturally specific providers. This is a need that is growing as our state continues to change. We support the development of evidence-based practices and intensive outpatient treatment coverage. We support addressing the workforce shortages in Minnesota through raising reimbursement rates. We know about the need for Bridges certificates to subsidize rent expense to low-income persons with mental illness, and of course the tremendous need for housing for this population. We support the preferred integrated networks that will integrate mental health needs with the physical health needs, and especially including the provision for consumer-initiated opt-out of the managed care network. In summary, we voted to support the governor's initiative to improve and enhance the delivery service system. Thank you.
Thank you for being so nervous. Are there any questions? Thank you. We are going to move down to Ms. Siebert, if we could.
Teresa's a quick act to follow, but I'll do my best.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Patricia Siebert from the Minnesota Disability Law Center. I've worked there for over 20 years, primarily on mental health issues relating to community integration and appropriate services for persons with mental illness. As I was sitting here, I was thinking exactly 20 years ago, Governor Perpich's mental health initiative was being considered by the legislature. That reform resulted in core mental health services statewide delivered through the county social service system. There are a lot of things we know now that we didn't know then that might have produced a different result, namely the importance of integrating physical and mental health care and treating the whole person, not dealing with two separate systems, social service system, health care system. The initiative before us now, I think, is the next big step. It integrates mental health into the health care system as a whole, where it belongs. We at the Disability Law Center support this effort and will be devoting our resources to ensure in the RFP process and beyond that it is user-friendly and responsive to the needs of consumers, and that it rewards positive outcomes for consumers and their families. I'd like to take just a moment to acknowledge the excellent listening skills of the Department of Human Services, Mr. Koistra, Commissioner Ludeman, and their staff, and the commitment that they have demonstrated to consumers in bringing forth this initiative. I do appreciate it. I was going to talk some about the importance of the comprehensive mental health benefit set, but I think you've heard that. The only thing I want to note about that is that people on general assistance medical care or Minnesota care won't have to become so disabled that they qualify as a medical assistance recipient in order to get some of the services that are only available right now to that group of people, and I think that's a really good thing. We wouldn't want people with physical illnesses, for example, to deteriorate to the point where they're so ill that suddenly they qualify for a panoply of health services that weren't even available to them before that. So that's a good thing. I also think the crisis intervention system that's in this bill will really add to the availability of services, appropriate services, and timely services to people. What I want to focus on are the preferred integrated networks that are part of this proposal. I've had many concerns and many experiences with managed care plans over the years that I've worked on mental health issues. I am convinced that the way this proposal is constructed makes it something that we need to try. This concept is near to my heart based on my own experiences. My brother John had a serious mental illness and spent quite a bit of time in our state and community hospitals. 10 years ago, he had experiences with back pain, weight loss, increased stress. The system response was, must be the bipolar illness we're acting up. He ended up on the psych ward. It took a lot of work by his family and his psychiatrist to get the medical tests that he needed to really figure out what was going on. To make a long story short, he had a virulent form of kidney cancer and died 6 weeks later. One of the things he said to me was, it's a lot better being a cancer patient than a mental patient. He was treated with respect and credibility that he had not found in the mental health system. He was 41 years old. People like him who have significant illnesses die 25 years earlier than the rest of us. They do. Integrating the healthcare delivery system is an important step to recognizing and treating the whole person. Integrated models, particularly where mental health and primary care providers work side by side, show greater improvements, better results for both the physical and the mental health needs of the people they treat. How can we not try this? There are many details to be worked out. I won't deny that. How will the coordination between the health services and the county services take place? How will basic supports like housing, finances, and employment fit in with the provision of the health care? Many parties are committed to working on these issues through the RFP process and beyond, and where needed, we will return to this body, rest assured. There are also details to be worked out to ensure that these services are truly responsive to enrollees. The voluntary participation provisions of this bill give consumers one of the greatest marketplace protections there is, the ability to choose another product if the integrated model does not work for them. I'm convinced that enough people will participate in this plan to make it a viable plan for them. One example is the sort of co-existing, Medicare SNP process, where these special needs plans, where these plans have been available to people who are on medical assistance and Medicare, they have enrolled in these plans in high numbers, and I think we'll see the same thing happen. For these and other reasons, which I wasn't able to talk about due to time, I want to let you know that the Disability Law Center supports the governor's initiative and will be working on it in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. If we could have Ms. Hagelin, let me just state for folks to understand, it is not easy to cut off individuals. For reasons beyond the control of this committee, the intentions was to hear this bill last week, and we weren't able to do that. We have only one more real committee meeting because of the process. We have other bills to hear next Friday. The following Friday is deadlines, and by the process, whatever happens in this committee needs to be referred back to Representative Thiessen's committee. And considering that last Friday is the 23rd, no bill would go anywhere if we had a meeting that week and tried to move a bill out of here. So, testifiers, you have to bear with me if I cut you off. Members, I don't want to cut your questions off. I do believe we will make time for any comments you have, but you just have to bear with me because we need to get this bill out today.
or voted down today, whatever the committee members are going to decide to do. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself for the tape.
Sure. My name is Peggy Heglin. I'm the director at Yellow Medicine County Family Service Center, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, as well as MICA, the Minnesota Intercounty Association. And I stood up when Mr. Gunningham asked who's on the MHAG Steering Committee. So thank you for this opportunity. Let me start by saying the counties are in full support of an integrated mental health care system. We also believe that social services that we provide for mental health and the mental health services that are provided by the medical community need to be combined. They need to go hand in hand together. As a part of the MHAG Steering Committee, Mr. Cunningham gave us an assignment. And so the counties went back, and we looked at the proposal that the governor was coming up with. And what we tried to do is identify three fundamental issues that we thought needed to be resolved. So I'm going to jump right to those. As I said, we support the bill and the concept. However, there are things that we feel need to be considered. And as Mr. Koister said, the devil's in the details. So just to identify the things that we would like you to consider. One would be that the services for uninsured and underinsured be met. The benefit set being opened up to GAMC and Minnesota Care is wonderful. We agree with that concept. However, there are many individuals who do not qualify. Secondly, we are concerned about the roles and responsibilities, how we decide what the health plan would do and how we decide what the counties would maintain as far as their responsibilities. It may sound simple, but it is a very, very complex issue when we talk dollars, we talk services, and we talk responsibility and liability. Third, the key thing for us is the continued safety net. And I understand the proposal does include issues for safety net issues, for crisis services, etc. However, there are a lot of individuals who fall between the cracks, as we all know. And usually the counties end up dealing with those. Our concern is for loss of dollars through the transfers, and our concern is that the MOE dollars will be identified and will eliminate some of our flexibility. Lastly, I want to just talk a little bit about the closures of the RTCs. We were very much in favor of the closures. In fact, I have worked with the Southwest 18. I think I mentioned that to this committee before, the 18 counties in the southwest corner of Minnesota. And we worked very hard to have that facility closed. And right now we're at the point of having a CBHH open in about 6 months. We're very excited about that. However, it's still difficult to get certain clients into a CBHH. The length of stay is a problem. And we do have people who we refer to as outliers. Again, those individuals who don't fit the mold and that we still need to deal with. They may be dangerous. They may be sexually active perpetrators. For whatever reason, they don't get to be admitted to the CBHH. Irregardless of that, again, I want to state that we do support the idea of expanding the benefit set for GAMC and Minnesota Care because it does move toward treating mental health as a medical condition, and it warrants mental health, in addition to the public services, private insurance coverage. But we do want to stress again that medical care is only one facet of that support. People with mental health problems need the social services that we continue to provide. These include housing, foster care, employment services, discretionary issues. For example, if that car doesn't start, you don't get to your job, things start to collapse. Chemical dependency and just general poverty issues. So we want to make sure that social services is at the table throughout the planning, throughout determining where those details fall, and throughout being a part of the success of this proposal. I'm going to turn to Joel. He's going to speak.
Madam Chair, I'm Dr. Hattler. Joel Hattler. I'm the Children's Mental Health Manager from Ramsey County, and I'm a member of the county group that has been talking with DHS for the last 2 years about the county's role in this initiative. I'll try not to repeat things that Peg said. Counties in general do support this legislation. We're clear that we've been trying to operate a seriously underfunded system and reliance on local county property tax dollars to shore up any adequate other funding has made it all the more difficult for us to provide an adequate level of funding. So any system that moves this out of the local property tax and into a bigger system is, we're in favor of that. Clearly support the infrastructure investments. What's not to like? They're in general good ideas, and they'll provide better services for children, families, and adults. We also support the idea that we should have a less fragmented system, that there should be fewer ways that care is managed, and it should be coordinated better. We support the integration of medical, mental, and physical health and social services. We support the idea that this happened under a single umbrella, not under multiple umbrellas. It's important to us that the preferred integrated network proposal includes counties as a managing partner, not as simply a provider of services. We don't feel that we can effectively integrate our services with others if we're simply working with them on a fee-for-service basis. Some counties are, in fact, interested in becoming preferred integrated networks. We're sympathetic with the consumer's issue with voluntary enrollment. However, from a strictly business point of view, we question about the impact that will have on our ability to create a system of care when we're not clear as to how many covered lives there will be. We support the expansion of the benefit set into prepaid medical assistance, CMC, and Minnesota Care. However, we question the use of county grants, the transfer of county grants as the basis for doing that. We've had numerous discussions with the department about whether or not how to determine whether, in fact, dollars were following the clients. And we believe that, in general, that may be true with several exceptions. One exception is if there is future growth and future service work with that the counties are responsible for. And we also have concerns that that the counties will be left with new expenses in a new environment, the cost for coordinating with health plans, the cost for bringing social services to the table, and that we will lose economies of scale by having the money be transferred. Lastly,
Mr. Hetler, hate to do it to you, but I think we got the gist of it, and Representative Anderson has a question.
Okay, can I just make one more point before we go on? We strongly oppose the increased cost to the counties for the use of resident the RTC state hospital system. We believe that will not be an effective incentive to create community beds, and we think that there are other systemic problems that are as important or more important.
Thank you, Mr. Hetler. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the previous testifier, I didn't get your first name, ma'am.
Peggy.
Ma'am, you mentioned something about your concern about working with the healthcare plans. Do you work with them now at all in relationship? And what's your relationship with them as far as working between the two, whatever situation you're in?
Ms. Heglin? Okay. As county, what happens is with the services to the elderly, those services have now gone through the health plans, and so counties end up contracting as a case manager to the health plan. So, for example, Yellow Medicine County has contracts with Blue Cross, Secure Blue, and we also have contracts with UCare. And we have to now provide case management services according to their dictate. So we follow their separate rules, we use their separate forms, we go to their separate trainings, and we have to, we work for a health plan. There were many, many problems with the transfer over of that program. It's taken probably 18 months to the point where we're feeling it, that we have some semblance of services that are in place. We know what we're doing, but it was very, very difficult initially to get the services in place at all. The transfer of dollars was very complex. Things didn't happen when they were supposed to happen. And so now, in essence, we are a contract provider, no different than that hospital or that home care provider or anyone else. And so the health plans determine what we do for case management. They're my boss.
Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, Ms. Hedlund, then, you see this as another problem coming up if in this bill here as far as having to deal with people with mental illness?
We're concerned about the role of the case management, for example. We're concerned about the dollars, but this gets off on another tangent for me. But my concern is that counties are altruistic. We're there to do eligibility. We're there to do quality control. We're there to see that clients get the services they need. And if I'm working for the health plan who pays for the service, I get concerned about that. So when we talk about cooperation and coordination, we work very hard on that. Our organization, MAXA, has a number of groups who are working with health plans directly and working with Department of Human Services. But there are concerns, in my mind, and I believe with my organization, about that type of relationship.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Brylin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name either.
Ms. Hedlund.
Hey. Okay. My question is, if there was someone testifying from Hennepin County, I would ask them that. But since you're testifying for counties, I will ask you. I know Hennepin County has a health plan. Is that relationship dynamic different than the one you just described?
Well, in Yellow Medicine County, we only have two health plans to choose from. In Hennepin County and in the other metro counties, my understanding, they have multiple plans to choose from. And in fact, if I had given more of my testimony, that was one key issue for us, is the multiple health plans that larger counties have to deal with. And as I described, for us, the two different health plans, they have many health plans who have their own ways of doing things. So coordinating that care and trying to be a key player with four or five health plans becomes very complicated.
Madam Chair.
Representative Brown.
Testifier Peggy, still didn't get your last name. Hedlund, thank you. Is there any other relationship that counties have anywhere that you're aware of where you could work with health plans, but the counties would be, the health plans would be working for the counties? You know, I don't have any problem with integrated care for the same reasons that testifiers have described here. We need to make sure we're taking care of mental health care and physical care, and the two should meet. But I'm also very much an advocate for elected officials and counties that are the public entities having the public dollar control and then subcontracting under, you know, to me, the private contractors like Mental Health Resources and others that we've heard from that have those, you know, the county people get to set what the RFP is, and then the health plans would go into it and not have you working for them. Are you aware of any other model that we could look to that would not be proposed in this bill but that would work better?
I'm going to refer to Joel here.
Mr. Hepler?
I do think that the department's main effort to write in something like that in their proposal for integrated networks, because Ramsey County is equally concerned about the idea that we would be a provider only in the new system, that really wouldn't fit our idea of what our role should be. But I believe that the preferred integrated networks, the intention is to have counties be a managing partner, not just a provider of services. And I think that's a much better idea. The complexities of how a health plan and a county might work together in that kind of relationship are kind of daunting and overwhelming, but they would be worth looking into.
Thank you. And if we can get the plans to, thank you for your testimony. If we can get the plans to come up together, appreciate that questioning, because that will lead us into some of our amendments that possibly will be offered. Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair, members, I just wanted to refer you to page 3, subdivision 3, where it says that these will be locally defined partnerships that include at least one health maintenance organization, and I'll skip it down, and the county. So the county is basically part of the management team for their county.
Thank you, Representative Huntley, for that clarification. Welcome to our committee, and if you can identify yourself, and please, be brief.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Glenn Andis. I'm Senior Vice President of Government Programs at Medica Health Plans. I'm also in charge of the Mental Health Network at Medica, and I might add, I'm a psychologist by training. We at Medica strongly support the Governor's Mental Health Initiative and urge you certainly to vote for it today. I've been on the Mental Health Action Group Steering Committee from the very beginning, and one thing that it was easy to agree on at the beginning was the mental health system is broken. It is still broken. It's almost 4 years later since we started. It's still broken. This bill before you at least is a start on a fix to the system. One of the key ingredients we believe is, in fact, the integration of mental health into the healthcare system as a whole, while very important, clear coordination of care with social services at the county level. Our Medica data shows that 80% of all psychotropic medications that are written are written by non-psychiatrists, basically family practitioners. That gives you some idea of the need, again, to integrate. We have a story in which we had someone who was very severely mentally ill and also was diabetic, and we had a face-to-face case manager who was working on the mental health side that basically indicated that this person was not taking their insulin, and basically saved their life by getting them to the emergency room and getting treatment for that, and that is another example of that integration. I do want to express some concerns that even though we are in favor, there are some concerns, and that is particularly around the current language around the opt-out. We prefer the previous language where there were very specific criteria for a consumer being able to opt out. And we certainly very much, I understand, the consumer concerns and wanting the voluntary nature of the program. But our overall concern is that with the ability to opt out at any time for any reason, that what we are providing is the opportunity really to have a two-tier system again. That this in fact will, people who basically want to have the status quo will urge consumers to opt out. And, if there in fact, then the theory is if there are enough people who opt out, then we haven't really reformed the system. We have two systems again. We have a fee-for-service system. We have a managed care system. And, the concern is that is not really reformed. We haven't done what we said we were going to do. I think the other concern is certainly around the risk issue that would be created, and and actually my peers here are going to talk a little bit more about our concerns around the financial risk that would be created by this opt-out situation. Now, having said that, with those concerns, I still say you should urge you to vote for this. We are in favor of it. We think it is, the reform that is needed. Thank you.
Thank you. If you could identify yourself and please keep your remarks brief.
Yes, I'll be brief. My name is Donna Zimmerman, and I'm Vice President for Government and Community Relations at Health Partners. And I'm here to say that we also support this bill, and I wanted to say that from the perspective of a health plan that is also a delivery system. As you know, we have an 80 inpatient bed unit at Regents Hospital, which is part of our integrated system. We're also a deliverer of care in the outpatient setting. We have step-down units at Hovander House and also Safe House, Safe Alternatives. So we are involved with the mental health delivery system really throughout its entire continuum. And as Glenn has talked about the integration in the part of the bill, we are very supportive of integration on many levels with this. I've been an MHAG member also since the beginning, aware of the issues and the complications of setting those systems up. I think we're committed to doing that. We also really support programs and know this from our work at Health Partners that primary care and behavioral health services need to be integrated and strengthened, and I think this bill would help move toward that. But the piece that I wanted to focus on and just make comment on is that the expansion of the benefits and the model benefit set and the work to support, to increase housing supports is critical for this. In our, in the view of our hospital and our delivery system, our inpatient hospital capacity is running at about 95% to 97% over the last 4 years. We think that the infrastructure investments that the bill would support would greatly help us in terms of being able to reduce that congestion that we have in our emergency department and the hospital. We participated in a study with DHS and a number of the metro hospitals that looked at the patient flow issues. And it, very interestingly, there's about, just with the hospitals, about 550 patients a year admitted into the inpatient units who really don't need to be there. And then over the course of a year, about 45,000 bed days where there is essentially no reason why that person would have to be taking up a hospital bed. It was just a 3-month study, but a great snapshot to work from in terms of why these community support services are so important. So I just wanted to say that, you know, from our view, again, as a plan, as a hospital, as a medical provider in this area, we are really very supportive of the components of this bill and would urge you to pass it.
Thank you. Any questions? Members, we have 15 minutes left. We have numerous of folks that are still on here. I am going to suggest that we hear from a member from AFSCME. There is a doctor from St. Cloud that should probably speak. And unless there is anyone else that you feel that you really need to hear from or an issue that has not been addressed in favor or against a particular provision in the bill, we need to get to these amendments. Can we get a representative from AFSCME? And again, I do apologize. More than half of us have a committee right after this, so staying past 12 o'clock is not an option today. Thank you, and welcome to the committee. If you can identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Bradford Benson, and I am Children's Mental Health Case Manager, as well as a 17-year mental health professional and a member of AFSCME. And good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my concerns about the Governor's Mental Health Initiative. The initiative has many positive aspects that promote progress in serving mentally ill. However, I am troubled about some aspects of it. I'm most concerned about the proposed role of HMOs in the Governor's Initiative. This would be a move away from county-based mental health social services. I'm concerned that the funding shift will not meet the initiative's stated goal of integrated services. And so I kind of phrase these as questions. What evidence is there that HMOs can manage resources better than county-based services? HMOs have no history of managing mental health social services similar to those offered by county-based services. There are always going to be a degree of fragmented services in a complex system. And therefore, what evidence is there that a shift to an HMO medical model will actually integrate services better, especially social services for the mentally ill, including housing, education, jobs and training, and community support? I also asked, how would the initiative address the uninsured and the underinsured? In my services, we take all comers. We don't ask whether they're on a health plan, or public a medical assistance, on a PMAP, or on an employer through their parents, or through an employer health plan. We take all comers and provide services for them. I also would ask, how does this initiative address accountability? I think the state, will the state hold HMOs to the same standards of accountability that they currently expect of the counties? But lastly, and I'm proud to say that as a Children's Mental Health Case Manager, that I actively coordinate with psychiatrists, therapists, community resources, schools, parents, relatives, as well as the young people I serve in order to support them and their families to succeed in the community. I believe that the collaboration, this type of collaboration, is the most important component of the work I do, and I believe that social connections and community support are often the best interventions to help help the mentally ill, and in particular in my case, in working with children who are mentally ill. And with the emphasis that this shift does of giving a medical treatment approach through the HMOs, I'm concerned that I don't know if that work I do will be defined through the HMOs as being billable and the like. And so I just have some concerns that about the shift away from social community supports that I feel are positive, that are important for positive outcomes for the mentally ill. So in summary, I'm trying to be brief here. I do have concerns about the shift away from county-based mental health social services, and I'm concerned that there may be some unintended consequences with the shift.
Thank you, Mr. Vincent. Any questions by members? Representative Kamar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if Representative Huntley might respond to that in briefly. The concern that the testifier raised.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Paymar, obviously there are some problems in how what the future relationship between the county social services area and their relationship to not only the health plans but to the medical providers, be they psychiatrists or providers, medical providers of the other of other specialties. I think it has to be worked out. There is language in here that says that the counties can partner with the health plans to jointly co-manage what is done. My personal view is that I think they can work it out and move forward. If we don't go with most of this bill, what you're going to say is that everything is fine and don't change it. And everybody that I've heard come up here testify says that the system is broken and needs to be changed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Representative McFarland.
Yes, I wonder if we could have the commissioner respond to that.
Commissioner Poister, in a brief.
Madam Chair, I will be brief. First of all, I want to reemphasize that the request for proposals to develop these networks require two willing partners, both the county and the healthcare network. We're not asking counties to participate on this if they're not willing to do it, if they don't feel like it's a good idea. We think it only works with willing partners because that is where a true partnership is formed. Secondly, I think there's some misinformation about moving social services to health plans. We're not moving social services to health plans. We've done a lot of work over the summer with counties and work groups about saying these are what the county's responsibilities retain. That's about housing, that's about employment, that's about all the social services that are typically you provide from a case management perspective. But we're saying in the healthcare side, you have to provide care coordination. And I should mention that absent this piece, we have other authority to develop managed care for people with disabilities that doesn't focus on the needs of people with mental illness and doesn't focus on care coordination and doesn't require a partnership with the county. So really what this piece of the language does is allows us to develop a service that is very specific to mental health needs because we already have the authority to develop managed care for people with disabilities that doesn't address care coordination and partnership. So we're not taking social services away from the county's hands. We're just requiring the health care side to provide care coordination, which I think is the intent of our expectation of health care.
Thank you. Dr. Vincent, if you can come be brief. 1 minute. I apologize. Thank you, Mr. Vincent.
Madam Chair, thank you for squeezing me in. I will be brief. My name is Steve Vincent. I'm a psychologist in Minnesota. I direct behavioral health services at St. Cloud Hospital. And I'm also a member of the Governing Council of the Minnesota Psychological Association, and I'm the president of a small group of hospitals in greater Minnesota that we call ourselves the Minnesota Behavioral Health Care Coalition. I've lived and practiced in Minnesota 30 years. I think I understand a lot about the system, and I'm going to take just this second to say 30 years, and I think I know what I'm talking about, and I've never testified here before, so it's kind of interesting to reflect on how after 30 years you can feel like a complete rookie or something. But nonetheless, thank you for the opportunity. This bill is a good step forward. I've worked on Mental Health Action Group task forces. I support this. The organizations I represent support this. I also want to take this brief opportunity to thank Representative Otremba for introducing a piece of legislation that would include psychologists as part of the critical access part of mental health services. Psychologists are the single largest group of mental health providers in the state. We are, in fact, critical, and I wanted to take an opportunity to make that point, and I will stop at this point in respect of your time and appreciation for having a chance to speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Vincent. Members, we are going to, unless there are any questions for Dr. Vincent, we're going to move into these amendments. And I'm not sure who they belong to. I do know Representative Greiling. You have a couple if you'd like to move your first amendment.
Madam Chair, I will. And I just want to ask, does anybody have the A5 amendment? Because I don't know. I mean, I have it, but I meant, did anybody else introduce it? Because I wanted to do an oral amendment in place of that one, but I'd like to use the A5 amendment as a placeholder. That one would delete all of Section 3. I would like to delete some lines of Section 3. So, members, this would be on page 3 of the bill. Section 3, I move to delete lines 310 to 324.
Representative Greiling moves to amend. Hopefully members have it on page 3, lines 10 to 24. Representative Greiling, would you like to speak to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. There have been various comments about the system is broken and needs to be changed. I would say that we do need changes, but the main problem with the system is that it is underfunded. We do need to integrate physical and medical care, and so I am not deleting all of Section 3 because I support those parts of it, but I don't want to take the money for the health plans from the county services. I know that they're saying it's only for the billable services and now they'll be billed by the private health plans, but I think what we need to do is have some of the new state money go to the health plans and leave the money that we have in the county system. When we had the last big efforts that were referred to earlier under Governor Perpich, we always planned to fund those things that were done in the late 80s. They were never funded to the tune that they should be, and hence we have the complaints about the counties. I think you can't bash and wallop the counties when they are not given the money that they need to do what we currently have. So I would say the system may need changes, but it's underfunded more than it's broken. So this amendment then, would leave the money there that people like Donna Zimmerman said is sorely needed in the infrastructure. They support that as well for housing and employment and case managers, as the AFSCME gentleman testified. And then look to Representative Huntley to come up with the funding for the health plans. I would hate to have the health plans come first when I think that the social services are just as important. They're equally important. They should not come first before the social services. So I hope all members can support this amendment, and then we'll find out how we can come up with the new money for the health plans.
Representative Huntley or Mr. Allen?
Well, I'll start out. Madam Chair and members, this whole bill is about integration of care. And if you want to integrate care, you ought to integrate the payment system as well. And what this amendment does is say that the payment system that we have right now is fine, and we'll keep it that way.
Mr. Allen?
Madam Chair, the budget transfers that are envisioned in this area, I can't emphasize enough how much the budget transfers are about the money following the client. I mean, when Bob gets two hours of ACT treatment during the week, and we want them to have the GAMC program pay for that for him, this is just moving the money from there to the healthcare program, whether it's fee-for-service or managed care. for him to receive those services there. This is very important for the financing of the model, expansion of the model benefit set in our mind, and also very important for the local projects for the counties that choose to engage in.
Representative Anderson?
Oh, my question's been answered.
Okay. Representative Growling, members, instead of moving A5, we need to do an oral amendment instead. Representative Garland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just, the last word would be that if we don't come up with new money for the health plans, it's a zero-sum game.
Oh, so she meant the last word. Okay. Members, all those in favor of Representative Greiling's oral amendment to delete on page 3, lines 10 to lines 24, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Division. All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed. Seeing that the vote is 8-4, Representative Breiling's oral amendment does is approved. Representative Breiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move Amendment 218. And Madam Chair, I'd like to have Pat Caldwell come up and speak to the amendment. This is an amendment I'm doing for the counties.
Ms. Caldwell, if you could be brief with your concern.
Madam Chair and members, this is the amendment that was discussed in testimony. This would remove the county cost shares for the regional treatment centers. There's the Section 6. The rationale behind that is that those are costs that counties have little control over, and also that people that are in the regional treatment centers for periods longer than 60 or 90 days are people that have really pretty severe conditions that need more time to have their medication stabilized, often have coexisting chemical dependency conditions, and so really require more time than is available. We have talked about the lack of availability of community alternatives. I think that the bill, if funded, would provide some of those alternatives, which would help, but I think that there is quite a bit more time required for that, and getting those up and running would require more than we need. So that's what this bill is.
Representative Island.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I supported this in days of yore when we had more regional treatment centers and we wanted to make sure there was an incentive for counties not to place people there and keep them there and not have to spend their own money for community care. This is an archaic system. Language now, though, because we don't have very many spots. Counties hardly ever get anybody placed there, and the reason they stay is because they can't get them out. They don't have the funding for the infrastructure to get them out, and hopefully the amendment we just passed will help with that or any other new money we can come up with in this bill. But I think the counties now are just taking up our job with local property taxes by having to pay this share, and they have no control over who is in there right now when they don't have the money for the infrastructure.
Representative Huntley.
Well, if you pass this amendment, it will make my job a lot more difficult by about $4 million.
Representative Breiling, do you want to respond to the $4 million increase?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry I was talking to Representative Hosh, but I'm assuming Representative Huntley said that this will mean she has to come up with another $4 million. Representative Huntley, that'd be great.
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, if I could come up with another $4 million, it would be great.
All right, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to have the department respond to this amendment.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. We had a discussion on exhibits with Hennepin County about the county share. I'll use Hennepin County as an example because I know they're about 25% of the state. We have $120 million of investment in this proposal, new money coming in to counties. The county share represents $10 million. So if you follow my math, we get up to about $130 million because the new investment doesn't count the movement of money. Hennepin County would, if they were to receive their share of the new investment, would have about, I believe, about $30 million of new money for a cost of about $2 million in increase of county share. I think it's a pretty good deal. I also think that, with respect to what just happened in the last amendment, counties now have even more funds that are now obligated to people who will receive services in, from General Assistance Medical Care and Minnesota Care, who will no longer have those obligations, will have an, additional resources freed up. So that, would add to that $130 million figure. So my point is, while we are increasing the county share, the purpose of this is purely for incentive because we reduced it to zero in the first 30 days. We are bringing, investing tremendous amounts of money back into the infrastructure. So that would be our comment on that.
Thank you. Representative Anderson?
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to Representative Brown.
Madam Chair, I would just say for any of us who are on K-12 education finance, I would make the analogy here. When we make the counties pay for the regional treatment centers and then we give them new money, that's kind of like having the special ed bill that school districts have, but then we give them money on the formula. They still have that special ed bill. So you can't count as new money if you're making them pay a bill that the state that should be the state's obligation.
Members, hopefully you're partially or fully informed, and we're going to vote on Representative Greiling's 218 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Those deeper voices. Division, please. Please. All those in favor? All those opposed? The amendment passes. Representative Greiling, I'm sorry, 7-4?
5.
7-5, I apologize. Representative Greiling, are you
for me?
Are you done? There are numerous other amendments. Would anyone like to claim them? I have Amendment A2, and members, because of time and because this is actually something that we would have to spend a little bit more time on, I'm not going to move it. I just want to say some of you have been talked to by the Minnesota nurses and the situation that's facing 9 Ramsey County nurses, and I'm hopeful. I know Representative Huntley has been talked to. There's a it's torn with the situation with counties wanting more flexibility because they have limited dollars and resources, especially around mental health. While we have 9 particular nurses that have gotten the short end of the situation because of funding their funding constraints. And these particular 9 nurses, this amendment would actually protect these 9 nurses. And I guess it's more than these just 9 nurses, because those in Ramsey County can come over to my county, Hennepin County, and bump them in continuation of care, and I can go on and on. But Representative Huntley, I did think about moving the amendment, and instead of doing that, I'll talk to you more after the committee. Members, are there any other amendments that you might want to offer? Seeing none, are there any comments or concerns? Representative McFarland.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm wondering how these changes that we've made affect the governor's plan, the cost of his plan.
Mr. Allen, do you have that answer or do you need time?
Madam Chair, is the question about the cost impact?
Yes, Mr.
The county share of the deletion of Section 6 is about $4 million a year out of the proposal. Budget authority amendment is still not quite clear to me exactly how much that might be. It might be on the order, depending on, because it was an estimate and would be actually determined through actual measurement out in the future. That's not as clear. I would guess that it's on the order of approaching $10 million a year, starting in January of 2008.
Madam Chair.
Representative McFarland.
So then could you tell me what you think that this whole bill would be worth financially? What the financial implications are roughly?
Of the amendment?
No, at the whole bill.
Mr. Allen.
Representative Walker, the whole bill, I think, is currently worth about $44 million in the first biennium. I think that is probably increased by about $15 million at this point.
By doing this?
Yes.
Other members? Seeing no one else, before we vote, I'd just like to say I want to thank those of you that have worked very hard. I think that it's going to go to Representative Thiessen's and then Representative Huntley's committee. Things will change. I think the clear message that hopefully Representative Huntley and the department will take is there is still some pieces that need to be worked out, and there are individuals that are willing, Representative Breiland being one of them, and the counties hopefully coming to the table, realizing that it does impact and change the intent that not only the department but the work that individuals have done in the last couple years to move this, realizing that. But I think that my vote, at least, I did not know how I was going to vote when I seen the amendments yesterday, but after hearing the testimony from some of the concerns of individuals, wanting to make sure that there was a clear message for Representative Huntley moving forward as he continues to work on improving this bill. Are there any other comments members would like to make? Seeing none, all those in favor, actually, this is going to be re-referred. I move to re-refer Representative Huntley's bill, House File 1067, to the Health and Human Service Policy Committee as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Representative Huntley, your bill does pass.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
The meeting is adjourned.